ప్రేమస్వరూపులారా,
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విద్ ఇన్, నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్, ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. Today is the 2nd of July, 2020. The Guru Purnima day is just a few days away. And I'm really so grateful to Bhagwan for this opportunity to be with you once again for this Radio Sai Live Thursday program from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center. If you have been following Outside Inside, Deep Inside in the last few weeks, you would have heard the story of Prashant Nilayam that I have been sharing in this series, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. We want to soak in the beautiful story of Bhagwan's life from 1950. November 23rd is when Bhagwan gifted Prashant Nilayam to the whole world. And in the previous 4-5 episodes of Outside Inside, Deep Inside, it was my endeavor to share with you the story of how Prashant Nilayam was built, from the groundbreaking ceremony to all the beautiful, amazing instances that happened, how the impossible became him possible by his grace, how the mandir had that beautiful high ceiling, how so many people from different southern states of India contributed. And we ended the previous week on the spellbinding manner in which the inauguration ceremony went on the morning of November 23rd, 1950. I narrated to you that spectacular episode of how Bhagwan gifted wife here, when I am here, coins, pendants to each one of them so mystically. So the birthday celebrations of 1950 was a 10-day affair. Bhagwan filled the devotees' hearts with unspeakable joy. And the most magnificent aspect of the birthday program, perhaps, was the jhula ceremony, the swing ceremony. It was a feast for the eyes. It was a bonanza for the soul. Bhagwan sat on the jhula lavishly adorned with flowers, and he would gently swing back and forth. There was a Kavi Sammelan, a poet's meet. The local poets R.V.S. Raju and M.S. Raju were each honored with a silver ornamental box for their beautiful compositions, which were rendered with devotion and exquisiteness. Bhagwan himself gave various gifts to devotees and workers who had participated in the construction of the Prashant Nilayam Mandir. The men received dhotis and shirts, and the women were given lovely sarees and blouse pieces. Bhagwan gave a motorcycle to the engineer Munusamappa. He was very instrumental in a lot of the construction work. 15 to 20 bicycles were given to the construction workers. So the engineer gets a motorcycle and the workers get bicycles. One item on the program was the performance by brothers B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan. They used to sing very soulful devotional songs which they had composed themselves. There was also Revatamma and her daughter Damila. Both of them, they used to sing very melodiously. The sonority and the devotion in their voices used to make Bhagwan so happy. There was also Sundaramma, the daughter of Mr. Seshagiri Rao, the pujari of the mandir, the first pujari of the mandir. She and her sister, they used to sing songs, and Swami used to call them Patalammai, the song sisters. Even they used to sing songs which they had composed. There was also Gana Visharade B. Jayamma, who was the wife of Gubbi Veeranna. She also rendered many devotional songs. So there were many accomplished musicians who had great love for Bhagwan, who performed during those 10 days of celebration. And for all the village folk in Puttaparthi, it was something out of the world, because such cultural celebrations were unthinkable for the simple rural folk of Puttaparthi. So all the villagers and people from surrounding villages came in large numbers, and all the artists, they were so happy to see such a welcoming, inviting crowd, and in the presence of Bhagwan, everything just goes on to a new dimension. There were also the Karu Kuruchi Arunachalam brothers. They played the drum and the Nadaswaram in the evenings, starting from 5 p.m. There was a specially erected temporary shamiana for them. And after each artist's performance, Bhagwan would gift all of them with some souvenir. It could be a ring, a chain, it could be something beautiful. And all of these gifts were materialized by the wave of his hand. One other interesting thing that happened during this birthday celebration is Swami performed the marriage of Damila and Seshadri on the inauguration day itself. As I told you, Damila and her mother, they used to sing songs. Swami performed her marriage, and during the marriage, Swami materialized a Mangala Sutram, and he gave it to the bridegroom to put it around the bride's neck. As many of us will be aware, the Mangala Sutram is the sacred thread which, once the bridegroom puts it on the bride's neck, that confirms the marriage. And when Bhagwan materialized the Mangala Sutra, all the eager devotees touched that sacred thread and they put it to their eyes as a mark of respect. And as everyone was doing this, looking at it with amazement and touching it and, so to speak, deriving blessings from it, suddenly this Mangala Sutra disappeared. And the bride became so anxious. The mother was now worried. How could this happen? That is such an important object for the marriage. And without it, the marriage can never be complete. And both the mother and daughter realized that the Mangala Sutra disappeared because they had indiscriminately let others touch it and see it. That was not Bhagwan's instruction. So when Bhagwan emerged in the evening, both mother and daughter, they fell at Swami's feet and they begged forgiveness for their oversight. And they pleaded with Swami, "Swami, please materialize the Mangala Sutra again." But Swami said, the sacred thread was not to be shown to everyone, that was not to be demonstrated, and that was not to be made an item of exhibition. That's a very holy object. Swami said, "I'm not going to materialize it again." And Swami also said, "I dematerialized it only to teach you this lesson. We cannot ever take the divine lightly. Everything that the divine does has so much significance, and if we don't adhere to the principles, if we don't adhere to the discipline that Bhagwan instructs and expects from us, then we lose the opportunity of being graced. We lose the opportunity of His blessings." Such a beautiful gift Bhagwan had materialized for the consummation of the marriage, for the completion of the marriage. And here, the bride lost that opportunity because they were careless. Another interesting incident happened during the birthday function. During the second day evening, Swami suddenly asked Saraswati Bai from Chennai if she could perform. She was a very accomplished musician, a vocalist. And she said, "Swami, I know a little bit about Sita Kalyanam. You know the story of Sita's marriage. I know some portion of that story. And she also expressed reservations because she had not come with all her accompaniments. She had not come with her accompanying musicians. Some artists in her troupe were definitely not there. And Swami wanted her to perform. When Swami called her and Swami said, 'Go and perform,' she just raised both her hands and cried out, 'Sai, Sai Baba, Sai Baba,' because she felt she is helpless. She cannot perform without the accompanying artists. And now there was such a big crowd and Bhagwan is asking her to perform and she didn't know what to do. Swami got up from his chair and Swami walked into the crowd. And as Swami was giving darshan, moving among the hundreds gathered, Swami suddenly picked a boy about 25 years old and Swami told this boy to go and sit on the stage. So this boy touched Swami's feet, took namaskar and went to the stage. And then Swami continued to walk again among the crowd. As he was walking, Swami again stopped after a while. And now Swami directed a 45-year-old man to come out of the crowd and go to the stage. So this person also did as per Bhagwan's direction. And once these two were seated, two volunteers appeared on the stage and they had brought along with them a violin and a mridangam. And they kept both these instruments on the stage. And Swami continued to walk among the people, among the hundreds and thousands who had gathered. And now Swami picked up a 20-year-old girl and Swami asked her to go to the stage. And now Bhagwan directed this girl to sing along with Saraswati Bai. Swami told that boy and the 45-year-old man to play the violin and the mrudangam. And only then it occurred to everyone how so amazingly Swami had chosen a team for Saraswati Bai to perform. He just walks into the crowd, picks up a violinist, picks up a mrudangist, picks up a vocalist, sends them to the stage, gives them the instruments, and Swami says, go and sing. Go and join Saraswati Bai for our performance. So this was how the cultural programs during the inauguration of Prashantinilayam Mandir were completely directed, orchestrated, designed, planned, executed by Bhagwan himself. Every time a performance happens, we know that he is the inner motivator, he is the inner director, but here was an instance when Bhagwan was so overtly, so obviously letting everyone know how if you don't have fear and if you just go with confidence, just follow his instructions and he will take care and he will do it so beautifully, so magnificently. He will get you talent. He will get you the opportunity. He will give you the energy. He will give you the creativity. All we have to do is, if you say that I should do this, Lord, I will definitely do. As Arjuna told Lord Krishna, Karishye vachanam tava, whatever you say, that I will do. I think that is what Bhagwan was teaching us right from the time he declared his avatarhood and on the inauguration of Prashantinilayam. This was a message that Bhagwan so emphatically conveyed. So there was another part of the performance that Saraswati Bai Madam had staged in front of Bhagwan. As part of the musical performance, there was the Mangalya Dharanam, the ritual placing of the wedding necklace on the neck of Mother Sita. And there was a statue of Mother Sita, and as this musical performance was going on and Mother Sita's statue was to be now adorned as per the songs that were being sung, she requested Swami to do that ritual himself. She wanted Swami to tie the Mangala Sutra on Mother Sita's neck. And Swami asked, where is the Mangalyam? Where is the sacred thread? And she just said, Swami, she didn't say anything. And Swami immediately materialized, he waved his hand, materialized a chain with a pendant, and Swami gave it to her. Swami showed that to the crowd himself. At first that pendant was plain on both the sides. Swami took it back and then Swami closed it within his hands. And when Swami opened his palm now, it carried the imprint of Bhagwan's photo on one side, and on the other side there was the inscription Hari Katha by Saraswati Bai Prashantinilayam. So first when Swami created the chain with a pendant, it did not have these inscriptions, but once Swami took it back, closed his hand, closed his palm and opened it, now it had forever written on that pendant for Saraswati Bai, Hari Katha by Saraswati Bai Prashantinilayam. Swami gifts her such a priceless treasure. It is almost like forever Bhagwan is letting her know that the opportunity that you have got is nothing short of an avalanche of grace that was conferred on you. And so sweetly, after that, Swami tied the Mangalyam, the Mangal Sutra, around the neck of Mother Sita himself as Sri Rama. He tied the wedding thread on the neck of Mother Sita. So these were some of the very, very beautiful spellbinding episodes concerning the inauguration of the Prashantralaya Mandir. As I said, it was a 10-day event. We have no idea of what all happened. Unfortunately, we don't have great documentation of the 10-day celebration. What we have is some of these stories, and these probably are just tip of the iceberg. We know nothing more of what happened, but those who were there, those who had the opportunity and the blessing, every day would have been a moment of magic and mystery. Every day would have been scenes of spectacular beauty and generous helpings of divine grace. Of course, there were generous helpings of delicious food also. So the spiritual hunger as well as physical hunger of devotees was completely satisfied, all of them who had the opportunity to be in Prashantralayam on that historic occasion of Prashantralayam coming into being. Professor Kasturi in Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Volume 1, goes on to describe how the bhajan hall, how the central prayer hall was in those days. The Sanctum Sanctorum had a platform. On the westerly platform, there was this shrine where there were two life-size oil portraits, one of Bhagwan and one of Shirdi Sai. Even now, towards the west, you have the Sanctum Sanctorum of Prashantralayam. Now, of course, by divine design, we have a beautiful bronze and multi-metal statue of Bhagwan himself, of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai, in the main Sanctum Sanctorum of Prashantralayam. The installation of this happened in the month of February 2020, but when the Prashantralayam Mandir came into being in the 1950s, there were two life-size portraits of both the incarnations of Sai, Shirdi Sai and Satya Sai. In fact, that is how it was for many, many years. Even now you have the portrait of Bhagwan and Shirdi Sai, but in the middle now you have the idol of Swami. In those days, in the middle was a silver figure of Shirdi Sai in the center, and below that there was a small portrait of Satya Sai. And Prashantralayam, right from its inception, was never very ritualistic. Only thing that happened as a daily routine was the morning bhajans and the evening bhajans. That is the only regular worship that was done. There are no fixed rites and rituals which have to be performed on certain holy days, nor are there any schedules, prayers or worship which are mandated. So that is how Prashanti has always been. Swami's stress has always been, be spiritual, don't become too engrossed with rituals. And the rooms on the ground floor were used mainly for storing articles and vessels. There were two small rooms which were set apart for private interviews, which Bhagwan used to grant. In the first floor, there was the room where Bhagwan lived, the living quarters of Bhagwan. That place is Mandir because Bhagwan himself resided there. And there was this large portico on the first floor from where Swami used to give darshan to the devotees thronging below. And he would also speak from this balcony on festival occasions. So if you see the pictures of Prashantinilayam of the early years, you will see this big veranda. Even now, you can see this huge corridor from one end of the Prashantinilayam Mandir to the other. In the later years, the Sai Kurunth Hall merged into the Prashantinilayam Mandir. Initially, the Mandir was standalone. And on top of the balcony, the first floor, there is to be this charming marble image of Lord Krishna playing on the flute. It is to be placed right in the center of the top floor of the portico. And everyone used to be enchanted with the beauty and the charm of that statue of Sri Krishna. And there is to be a flight of steps which leads to the top terrace, at the center of which, facing the approaching road, there used to be a bust of Bhagwan, and it used to be on a pedestal in front of the flagpole. So in those days there was a flagpole and there was this bust of Bhagwan. And Swami used to give darshan from near this bust on days when the Prashanti flag used to be hoisted, and he used to bless the huge assembly of devotees with his Abhayahasta, do not fear, why fear when I am here, gesture from the top of the mandir. And the flag used to be hoisted on various festivals and special occasions. The flag carried the representation of the symbol which Bhagwan had materialized in the circle right in front of the building on the ground. The symbol always had the stupa, the series of concentric circles which lead in the pillar. The pillar represents yoga or the union with God. And there are a number of rings in this pillar which indicate the stages of yogic discipline. And even now we can see this beautiful stupa. We don't have the original stupa which was there in the Prashantinilayam darshan ground right in front of Prashantinilayam Mandir. This is now there in the Prashantinilayam campus of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. We have now this beautiful stupa which is next to Yajur Mandir, the Sarvadharma stupa. In the early years of Prashantinilayam Mandir, we had this silver stupa which was part of the darshan grounds, and always these stupas had the unfolding of the lotus of the heart at the top, and that signifies spiritual light, that signifies the flame of illumination. On the occasion of the ceremonial hoisting of the Prashanti flag, the flag of peace, Bhagwan used to expound on the inner significance of this lotus circle and the flag. Swami used to command the devotees to hoist the flag in their own minds and keep it flying aloft there, contemplating all the time on the lessons that the flag is intended to teach. Swami also always used to speak about the deeper meaning of the three gates to the prayer hall. As many of us know, to enter the Prashantinilayam, you have to first cross the outermost gate, now where the Ganesh temple is. Once you cross that gate, you are into the compound of the Prashanti Nilayam Ashram. And Professor Kasturi beautifully describes that that is the gate of darkness. Once you cross that gate, you are out of darkness. You have come into light. You have come into peace. Any person who crosses it leaves darkness, leaves ignorance, leaves the inertia behind. He has nourished that holy thought of coming to the presence. And because he has encouraged this thought of coming to the divine, all darkness and ignorance has fallen behind him. People who are covered in ignorance and darkness, they will not even have the curiosity to enter Prashanti Nilayam. So that is the gate, the first gate. You have to cross the gate of darkness. And then you come to the next gate where you enter the darshan area. Now we call it Sai Kulwant Hall. In those days, that darshan area is where the lotus circle was, and in the center of the lotus circle was this lotus pillar. And Professor Kasturi beautifully describes that this is the second gate that you have to cross. One is attracted as you enter here with the magnificence of the Prashanti Nilayam building. You are attracted by the beautiful lighting, the colored chandeliers, and the sheer beauty and sublimity of the place. So initially you leave your tamas, and now you leave your rajas. You convert all that is passion in you into devotion. And Professor Kasturi says, next comes the very door of the prayer hall, the gate of wisdom, which will lead you to the abode of peace. So you have the gate of darkness, you leave the tamas, then you leave the rajas, and then you come to the bhajan hall, to the door which will lead you into the sanctum sanctorum of Prashanti Nilayam. And now you are entering into the arena of peace. That is the door towards sattvic qualities. That is the door that leads you to sublimity. In fact, this is how Professor Kasturi describes it, but all of us have experienced this, isn't it? As you step into the Ganesh gate, as you breathe the air of Prashanti, you feel so different, you feel so recharged, you feel so regenerated. And as you enter Sai Kulwant Hall, you are touched with the power of His presence. You forget the world. You are lost in the magic of His presence. And if you have the opportunity to come into the Bhajan Hall, then you are in the proximity and vicinity of the Divine Himself. Every gate you cross, you are purified. You are going closer and closer to your own beautiful self. That is how Prashanti is designed. In fact, you will find various gates also in many religious places. All of these are preparing us for the final moment of seeing the Lord, of seeing the Lord within us. But we need those stages for our purification. And in those days, Prashanti Nilayam Mandir also had a lot of flowers, lot of flower-bearing trees, and there was this lovely garden around Prashanti Nilayam. A lot of devotees used to contribute there. There were these lovely flower pots, and Prashanti Nilayam always has been green, even though this area is a royal seema and is known for its dry and dreary lands, but the ashram has always been so green, and it even now it continues to be. If you go to any lane by lane of Prashanti Nilayam, your eyes are filled with greenery, your eyes are filled with this freshness. You never ever feel that you are in a dry area, and it is this greenery, it is this ambience that Bhagwan fostered right from the days when Prashanthi Nilayam came into being. Even now you find such beautiful exotic plants in every part of the ashram. And Professor Kasturi goes on to say how Bhagwan, right in those years, had set the Prashanthi Nilayam atmosphere in tune with Mother Nature. How prayer began very early in the morning, 4:30 a.m. Omkaram used to start. And 21 times Omkaram would then be followed by Suprabhatam. Suprabhatam came much later when Bhagwan set up the Veda Patashala in the 60s. He had these little students whom he took under him to teach them Vedas. To them Bhagwan taught Suprabhatam. But Om has always been the starting point of the early morning routine in Prashanthi Nilayam right from 1950, and it continues even now. So the morning routine always begins with this Omkaram 21 times. And if you are someone who has stayed in the ashram, you would know how 12 bells go on before 5 o'clock in Prashanthi Nilayam. And these 12 bells sequence signify the 12 Adityas, the 12 directions. We are signifying and purifying all the directions of the universe. And after 5 o'clock you have 5 bells, and 5 bells representing the 5 elements of the cosmos. Om is the sound of God. If you have to represent God as sound, it is Om. And the bell again is the most natural sound. And it is a very purificatory sound. And just before Om starts, you have one bell and then Om begins in Prashanthi Nilayam. Om is extolled in the Upanishads as the best and the most effective symbol of God. A, U, Ma. Through these syllables, A, U, Ma, we reach to the stage where there is no sound. Professor Kasturi describes that the waking state in which the soul is dominated by darkness and is engaged with the gross physical body, that is A. U is the dreaming stage. In A, U, Ma, A is the waking stage. U is the dreaming stage where the soul is dominated by the quality of activity and passion and is engrossed with the subtle body. So gross, subtle, and finally Ma. Ma is deep sleep. Waking, dream, deep sleep. A, U, Ma. In deep sleep, when you are in deep sleep, that's when the soul finds the inner wisdom. That's when the soul is completely in tune with truth. Beyond all these stages is the soundless Om, and that is the real self. Bhagwan used to say, Ekaksharam Brahma. Brahma is represented with the sound of Om. In fact, all the bhajan sessions in Prashantanilayam, they begin with Om. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti is how the bhajan sessions end. So Om is the starting point of all sadhana, all namasmarana, all japa, all dhyana. And that is how Prashantanilayam also welcomes the dawn every single day. And after the Omkaram is done 21 times, then we have the Suprabhatam. Now this is a daily prayer which happens in the home of every Sai devotee. It starts with awakening the God within. Bhagwan himself taught the Suprabhatam in the early years, in the 60s, to little students who were studying Vedas. And today in the schools and the hostels, everywhere, in every Sai home, you have Suprabhatam chanted. The routine in Prashantanilayam is the routine that should be followed in every home to recreate that Prashantinilayam wherever we are.
Ishwaram Vasuta Sriman Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttishta Satya Saisha Kartavyam Daiva Manhikam Uttishto Uttishta Partisha Uttishta Jagadipate Uttishta Karuna Purna Lokamangala Siddhaye Chitravati Tata Vishala Sushanta Saude Tishthanti Sevaka Jana Stava Darshanartham Aditya Kanti Anubhati Samasta Loka Shri Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhatam Twannama Kirtana Rata Stava Divya Nama Gayanti Bhakti Rasa.
So that is how Suprabhatam happens in Prashanthi Nilayam, and as the Suprabhatam is going on, you really don't want it to end because it fills you with so much of serenity. If you are someone who has been doing this practice, you know, one day you don't do it, you'll miss it so much. Because Suprabhatam fills you with that serenity and purity early in the morning. And if you are in Prashanthi Nilayam, after that you have this opportunity to listen to Vedam, these Vedic chants early in the morning, high-throated, full-throated, the pundits chanting, and that really, really cleanses the air and recharges it with amazing vibrations. Prashanthi Nilayam pulsates with these sanctifying sounds every morning and evening. After the Suprabhatam, we soak ourselves in the sonorous chants of Vedic hymns.
Whoa!
So that is how the morning Vedam starts every day, and it is really altogether different experience to join these morning routine in Prashanthi Nilayam. If you have to make the most of your stay in Prashanthi Nilayam, you should not miss being part of these morning Vedam sessions. And after the morning Vedam, you have the morning Nagar Sankirtan. Again, to walk around the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir, to circumambulate the holy shrine of Prashanthi Nilayam by singing bhajans early in the morning is such an elevating experience. Bhagwan always stressed on the power of Nagar Sankirtan to purify the atmosphere, purify ourselves. In fact, this is one of the very first activities that Bhagwan asked the Satyasai organization, asked the Sevadals, asked the devotees to undertake. Mr. P.V. Raman Rao, the late Raman Rao sir, records in his biography how Swami was extremely pleased with Nagar Sankirtan, and that's how he expressed immense happiness when this was conducted way back in the 60s. And from then on, this tradition continues and Prashanthi Nilayam leads the way. There is not a day when early morning Vedam does not happen or Nagar Sankirtan does not happen. And singing the glory of the Lord, circumambulating the holy shrine, the most love-charged place on the earth, the most sacred shrine on the planet, there cannot be a greater blessing. After the Vedam, you are filled with the thrill and joy of Nagar Sankirtan. I'm sure those sounds will be very nostalgic for all those who have visited Prashanthinilayam. You will be recreating in your mind those beautiful vibrations of being here. In fact, these sounds, through these sounds, you can really relive Prashanthinilayam wherever you are. That is the magic of these sounds. That is the magic of these beautiful practices that Swami had set up in Prashanthinilayam right from the early years, 1950s and 1960s. And this is what makes Prashanthinilayam what it is for all of us. And in those days, what really attracted people is what happened after this. Very early in the morning, Bhagwan used to come out for darshan. After the Nagar Sankirtan, people would just line up for darshan and then they would wait for Bhagwan to come out. And 6:30 in those days, Swami would be out and he would be among the devotees, blessing devotees, giving them the chance of earning his grace, talking to them, giving them the chance of touching him, taking their letters, conversing with them. And we know how Bhagwan led such a simple life. He would hardly eat the simple food of the poorest of the land. That is the food that Bhagwan ate. And in those days he would eat with the devotees and he would eat whatever the devotees offered. Swami used to sleep on a bed on the floor, bread spread on the floor. In his room there was nothing but a chair. That's all. All the time of Bhagwan just went in giving darshan and giving interviews. Darshan and interviews. Darshan and interviews. Darshan bhajan interviews. After the darshan, he would call people for interviews, talk to them for hours together. And then bhajans would happen. And after the bhajans, Swami would rest hardly for an hour or so. And again, he would, early in the afternoon, he would be back. And again, darshan and again interviews and again bhajan. And after that, he would continuously work with the devotees, plan many projects. That is how Bhagwan's time has always been. Darshan, bhajan, interviews. Allowing people to touch him. In those days, anybody could touch his feet. In fact, if they came to Prashanthinilayam, they had the opportunity to get Padamskaram and interview. Professor Kasturi, when describing the interview room, so beautifully describes that the interview room at Prashanthinilayam has been the scene of countless transformations of character. It has been the place where there has been revolutions of belief. It is a place where there has been confirmation of faith. It is the place where there has been curing of disease. It is a place where there has been calming of temper. It is the place where discarding of hatred happened. It is the place where salvaging of souls materialized. It is the place where reunion of hearts occurred. That is what the interview room in Prashanthinilayam is all about. He describes Bhagwan as the divine physician who diagnoses the ills of the supplicant and lays bare the innermost blemishes of character and conduct with utmost kindness. He applies the soothing balm of his grace for the prescription of appropriate remedies. Anyone who came to Prashanthinilayam in those days was given an interview. Seldom does a person leave after the interview with a dry eye. Swami gives to everyone hope and courage, contentment and faith, assurance and solace. Because he always says, wife, here when I am here, put all your faith in me. I will guide you. I will guard you. In fact, there are so many lovely instances of all these transformations that Professor Kasturi talks about, transformation of character, revelation of belief, confirmation of faith, calming of temper, reunion of hearts that has happened in the interview room, and the number of instances are endless. Maybe in the next episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, in this series, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, I will share with you some very telling instances that happened in the 50s. Prashantram came into being in 1950, but there were some very interesting stories from 1950, 1951, 52, people who had the chance to go into the interview room in those days and who experienced these instances where their faith was confirmed, where their mysterious disease was cured, where they finally found solace. And Professor Kasturi very beautifully narrates many of these instances in Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. And today we have nice volumes written by early devotees, and through their experiences we get a glimpse of how it was to be with Bhagwan in the times when the interview room came into being, when Prashandali Mandir came into being. And we will soak ourselves in these stories in the coming episode of Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, in this series where we seek to relive the stories of Bhagwan's life that unfolded after 1950. So dear listeners, please be with us, please be tuned to this program as we share with you beautiful chapters from the story of His glory. As always, if you have any queries or comments, any suggestions, anything that you want me to add into this program, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments, feedback to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. With gratitude and love, I offer this session at His lotus feet and pray that we continue these sessions and He guides us to beautiful instances of His life. We hope that we are able to document these for the succeeding generations, for posterity, because this is our only source of nectar. This is our only source of inspiration that will make us feel the proximity of divinity. Thank you so much. Sairam.